Real Talk fam, welcome back to the show. Today we have Jeff Sergeant Carley with us. And I tell you what, well, he's not really with us like in a room in a studio, because y'all know how we do this. We'd be Zooming and we don't get to sit in the same studio because we're hundreds of miles apart, maybe even thousands of miles apart. But at the same time, it's really cool that technology allows us opportunity to connect with so many people across the globe. And Jeff is just one of those people that we want to connect with. I want to stay connected with, and I want to connect him with you. Yeah, it's just a phenomenal human being, an awesome person. Jeff, welcome to the show, brother. How are you doing, man?
Good. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that. And the kind.
Round two. We can be transparent up in this place. Last time we didn't record it, y'all. We got halfway through it. Actually, a little more than halfway through it. And I was like, dang, I don't even think I hit the record button on this joker. This time, Jeff, we are recording. This is all live. We ain't editing nothing out. So
nothing. We're here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, man. Just a little brief introduction before we jump into like who Jeff really is, but just a little brief introduction of who you are, man.
Awesome. Yeah. So like you said, Jeff Carley, Air Force, been in for 15 years, cut my teeth on a whole lot of bad mistakes, a whole lot of bad decisions. And that led me to where I'm at now with a different viewpoint on life, which is exactly what we're going to talk about today. But I'm married. I tricked somebody into marrying me, and I kept her, so that's even better.
Ladies and gentlemen, what he means is he was really smooth when he was talking to this young lady, and she wanted to marry him. Because Jeff, we gotta be careful what we say, man.
You know, you know, there's a story behind it. I gotta remember my audience here. But met her in high school, everything else, and I was a smooth guy. And when it came time to ask her the question, I came up with this long speech and everything, and wouldn't you know it, I got down on one knee, my mind goes blank, and I said, we've been together a long time, will you marry me? So that's what I mean by tricking. If a lady will say yes to that, you know she loves you for who you are, because it definitely wasn't for what I was saying at that moment.
You know, that's probably for the best. You know, sometimes we there's a lot of people out there, and I'm sure you've come across, maybe even experienced it. I've been guilty of this, you know, putting up a little bit of a facade, man. So I'll tell you, sometimes it's not sometimes, all the time, it's better just to have it real. You know what I mean? So I'm good on y'all for making that commitment to one another. I tell you, you can tell there's an age difference. Audience, y'all can't see us. Jeff's a handsome young man, but y'all can't see us, and you can just see her how polished he is and how refined. And you got this old crusty chief over here that has been around the block and shot at a couple times, and it's just a little bit different. So Jeff, thanks for keeping the Air Force young and giving us a lot of wisdom. And man, I know you know, but I'll tell the audience, I had a lot of respect for you since the first time I met you, man. And I could tell you were locked in and you were committed to something that was greater than all of us, and that says a lot about you and a lot about your character. And you know, I'd like you to pick maybe four things from when you joined us here on Earth until now, where you are. Four things, maybe those milestone moments, whatever you want to call them, man. Because I've listened to Joe Bogdan, and man, what a phenomenal interviewer. I'll never be at that level. But he's asked questions similar to that before. And I find myself listening to the podcast and learning more about who's on the other end of the mic, because the audience a lot of times know who the host is. But about four of those milestone moments, man, to kind of helped shape or give you the opportunity to be shaped into the human, the husband, the father, the airman that sits in front of the mic tonight, man.
Yeah, definitely. Four moments. So I have been alive on this earth for 35 years.
Hold the phone.
I'm telling you. And I'm starting to get gray hairs now, too. You were talking about this young, dapper guy in front. I'm telling you, I was doing my hair this morning, and they're popping up everywhere. I'm about midlife crisis in the hair section now. Now, you know, I'm a couple gray hairs from shaving it.
Yeah, that's wisdom.
But 35 years, I say that because four moments in those years, I can't imagine what these four moments are going to look like, you know, another 35 years from now. It's so cool how we change. But if I had to say what my first couple moments was, I have to thank my dad. Chick-fil-A and my dad, the two go together. If you know anything about me and anything about my family, we're foodies, right? For those of you who can't see me right now, you hear dapper, handsome man, but this guy has got some LBs on him, right? I have a hard time pushing away from the good food, and food is where you come together and you meet each other. I spent a lot of time around the dinner table. So Chick-fil-A and my father, why do I say these things? Well, from a young age, I always wanted to do everything. I always wanted to go to the movies. I wanted to drive a car. I wanted a cell phone. Back when cell phones had external antennas that were 3 feet long, and you could like use them to point things on the board. You know, not these cool sleek things now. You know, I always wanted one. And my dad said, you can have anything in life you want. You just got to work hard.
Yep.
And I said, okay, well, I can work hard. And I liked food. And Chick-fil-A, we happened to know the guy who was managing the place and running it at the time. And so my dad kind of unknowingly behind my back was like, hey, would you hire my son? And he was like, well, he's got to go through the interview process. So my dad starts coaching me through all these things, how to be a man, how to, and we went out. You got this 14, 15 year old kid. On my 15th year old birthday, I go out, I get these slacks, I get this nice button up shirt, I learn how to tie a tie, all these little things. And I sit there and I go through the interview process and I get it. So my dad helped me out there. And what I learned in that job was a lot of what shapes me for who I am today, the my pleasure mentality, mm-hmm. right? When you go to any other establishment that there is out there, fast food speaking, you're lucky if you have any kind of consistency between visits, let alone even at the same place with the same cooks and the same people, right? Well, one thing I learned working there was consistency was our trademark. And my pleasure was a way of saying, I'll go above and beyond anything you want, right? And it's like Princess Bride, as you wish, what he said there is like, it's our way to say we value you and we care about you, your family, we're here for anything. So I learned that from a young age. So I'd say that's moment one. That set me up for success because my dad always said it wasn't about how many jobs you worked. It was about how well you worked that job, right? So I learned that at a young age. So that brought me up to eventually joining the Air Force. My second moment before the Air Force was, you remember the young lady I was talking about earlier, the wife of 13 years now, three kids later. Well, before all that happened, I had to get blessing from her parents. And so I went through this whole process of the wife was at college and I said, all right, I'm going to ask. Well, she's out of town. It'll be safe. Well, the wife knew what I was doing, but her parents didn't.
Yeah, so that way she wouldn't have to see them get rid of the body.
That's right. That's right. Her father and her had already worked this out. Yeah. Right. Hey, he's going to come over, bury him in the garden. We'll never find him. So I come over, we sit down. And it's awkward as can be. And being an adult now looking at it, I just think, young guy, what were you thinking?
Hey, did you? Hey, I got to ask, man, did you have your slacks on like you did for that interview?
Ironically, yes. So I dressed the part, man. I had just gotten done with an interview at a marketing firm down there in downtown Houston, Texas. And I thought, I look pretty sharp. I'll go ask now. So I swung by on the way home and so I'm sitting there and it's middle of summer and it's hot. We're sitting out there on the porch. 30 minutes goes by. I can't find the words in my mouth. I can't find the words to say simply, can I marry your daughter? I can't. I talk about anything else, but I can't say those words. Finally, he looks at me and goes, go ahead and ask what you're here to ask, young man. And I was like, oh, he already knows. It's too easy. Sir, can I marry your daughter? No. Gets up, walks away. And I was like, this did not go the way I thought. So the mother-in-law is coaching me through this and she goes, you know, how are you going to pay for our little girl? How are you going to provide the things in life? And she starts going through bills, very adult, very real.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is what it costs. Well, at the time I was working a job that I thought I was making good money, $500 a week and waiting on tables. And I thought, oh, I'm rich. I wasn't rich. I wasn't. So I started looking into what the future held and there goes the Air Force, right? So I hopped in one of the greatest branches there is, period. And then I hopped in, and I know you're a dirt boy. I mean, no disrespect. CE has a lot of love.
Watch yourself. I'll turn this thing off.
I'll stop recording. I've done it once.
I've done it once. I ain't afraid.
No, but I joined POL, a fuels maintenance community, and I fell in love with that. That was the best choice for me. You get to work with real men, people with a drive and passion for life. And I fell in love with it, you know? And so that was moment two. And while I was in there, I did things like Iraq. I did the nice, comfortable deployments, like all Dafra. You know, I got steak and lobster three nights a week. You know, I figured that out between the flight line chow hall, the main chow hall, and then the army chow hall. Like I said, I can't push away from the table. I figured out how to get steak and lobster 3 days a week.
We found that out in 2003 in Afghanistan, 2002 and three. We won't talk about it a lot. I think some guys from KBR are still kind of mad about that. But anyway, I digress.
Oh, KBR. I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so we'll count those experiences as number three. That was a big growth experience. Mm-hmm. I missed the birth of my second child during one of those deployments. I didn't meet her till she was about 3 or 4 months old. So that was a big, big adult moment for me. It took some real introspection. I think that's the word, right? Looking inside of yourself there. And it took a lot of growing during that deployment to not be bitter and jaded and to get everything out of it. So that was a big moment for me. And then the fourth final huge moment is why I'm here with you today. It's starting to look forward to what that next chapter in life, what that next impact can be. As you know, being in the military, and as I assume a lot of our guests do, as I've listened to a lot of your podcasts, it seems very military focused, is we are very used to being in a world, in a mission set, where we are part of something bigger than ourselves. That is normal. That is day one military basic, get off my bus, day one intro stuff. And I start looking forward to what that next chapter looks like. I mean, I've got 5 years left for my 20, and that doesn't mean I'm getting out in five, but it means I could get out in five, depending on what that looks like. And so I start thinking, well, I am part of something bigger. How can I keep doing that? And that's why I've started this leadership movement. That's why I've started my Summit Leadership blog and podcast and all these other things, is I feel like through our experiences, through our moments in life, I only have four that I told you, but between moment one of me being born and moment 50, 100, gazillion, trillion of me dying and passing on to the next life here, that dash there, there's so many different moments that happen. Well, one thing I realized is in the military, we do a really good job at explaining our successes and our failures to those around us. We do a really good job about talking about our moments, and we build some new ones together when we're together. But most of the conversations, if you throw a whole bunch of us together, the very first thing we do is talk about all our moments.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I could put a platform, if I could design something where, like what you're doing, you're talking to people and getting their moments and you're relaying that to people, and they get information from that. And I'm so inspired by that. It's such a powerful medium that I want a piece of that. I don't want to be done giving to the whole. And that's my fourth moment. That's why I'm here right now, is I have figured out why, as you know, I'm a man of faith, that God put me on this earth. He put me on this earth because I've got the gift of gab. I've got the gift of people liking me and wanting to talk to me. And what better way to take advantage of that than to have them talk about themselves to people who want to listen?
You know, I really appreciate that, Jeff. You made me think of something, and I'll butcher it, and I don't remember exactly who said it, but the quote comes to my mind that said, somebody said, two greatest days in your life, the first when you're born, the second when you realize why. And man, I tell you, for me, and it sounds like for you, I would submit that everyone, when you find out why you breathe air and why you care and why everybody else cares, then, or why they should care, then that's powerful. You know, you feel like you're living in your, and you believe you're living in your purpose. It's extremely powerful. A couple of things I'd like to go back on before we get too far into, you know, kind of what we're here to talk about, which is Summit Leadership, man. And I'd say that's just phenomenal. I'm really proud of you. But before we get there, why did you choose the Air Force? I know now you know that it's the greatest branch.
That's right.
On the face of the earth. You know, I got to say it. Like, I like to tell people, you know, the Marine Corps, like, we locate, close with, and destroy the enemy, right? And they say it with a lot of gar and a lot of effort.
They do.
And stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, no, brother. That's not how that happens. And I like messing with the Army. Army says, hool, heads up. Heard, understood, acknowledge. I tell them, no, homie, that ain't that. It's heads up air power. You know what I mean? And I told a mass sergeant that one time in the Army, we were on after the convoy, and we were messing around, jaw jack, you know, sharing moments, as you said earlier. And he's like, I said, hey, mass sergeant, you know what? And I'm a senior corporal that's what they call me. I was a senior airman. They call me senior corporal. I was like, you know what? Who else stands for? And he's like, yeah, idiot. And I was like, he says it. And I was like, no, Matt Sergeant, it's heads up air power. Boy, he almost gave me a piece of his, more than a piece of his mind. I said, well, when we were on convoy, dude, I said, you weren't in the turret because that's where the Mass Sergeants go. But I said, if you were to look up, that was the belly of an A-10. Air power saving your grass every day. Anyway, I digress. I'm a little prideful, proud of, I should say.
Yeah.
Air Force, I've been doing this thing for a hot minute, but I love it. Going back, though, why did you choose the Air Force, man?
Yeah, so I come from a line of proud heritage is our tagline, right, in the Airman's Creed. But it's true in my case. My grandfather was in the Army. He was an engineer. And then my dad was a, he worked at Minot as a secret squirrel admin kind of guy, right? Oh, okay. He's got lots of good stories about that. I don't remember the exact title there. But then my uncle was a, what they used to call him, security police. You had the two branches of security forces, right? And my uncle loved it. My dad loved it. And my grandfather said, don't you dare join the Army. Go to the Air Force. They got better funding and better everything. Yeah. I don't know anything at all. So I, first of all, my military experience is like Black Hawk Down, Saving Private Ryan. I'm like, you know what? I want to kick in doors and issue freedom. And so I told the girlfriend, wife now, I said, hey, that's what I want to do. I want to go be these, paint my face green and kick in the door and say, America, that's what I want. And she goes, well, if you want that, then you don't want to be with me. And I said, okay, fair enough. Okay. So I went and talked to the recruiters anyways. And I thought, why not, right? So I went and talked to them anyways. And I scored really well on my ASVAB. And everybody's like, we want you. And I was like, okay, what jobs do you have for me? And no job sounded good except for the Air Force. When I spoke to the Air Force, this is how I knew the branch was different altogether. Before you join the military, you have this delayed entry program, DEP, right? It's basically their way of saying, we're going to take you, but you're on retainer until we have a spot on the bus ready. And every program has that, but it looks differently, right? All these other programs, when they have it, they're like, all right, man, we'll give you a call. Here's a T-shirt. You're cool. The Air Force goes, all right, we're going to give you a call. Here's a T-shirt. Also, we meet up every Friday at this really cool like event center where there's bowling and there's laser challenge and there's free pizza and all these different things. And I said, that sounds pretty good. I'll go with you. So they had more bells and whistles. So that's what got me in. But we talked about what kept me, though. So,
yeah.
But they got me in.
That's awesome. Free pizza, man. You can't turn down free pizza.
No, you can't.
You know, you can't, I don't think the Marine Corps issues out free pizza. They do give you a lot of opportunities to burn calories should you choose to eat pizza, though.
Should you choose.
That's yeah, right. Should you choose, and choose wisely, my young Marine. Something else I wanted to ask you. I know you're an ALS instructor, and for our civilian audience, that's kind of like a more of what you would call an entry leadership course for maybe mid-level managers in a civilian corporation. And so Jeff is a phenomenal, extraordinary instructor doing that. But that's not where you just step in, right, Jeff? You don't just fall into those positions. Can you explain, kind of like why you chose to be an ALS instructor, if that is what happened, and how did that process come about?
Definitely. Yeah. So Airman Leadership School, ALS, the very first gateway to leadership, right? It's the first time in your airman career where you are no longer responsible for yourself. You're responsible for yourself and all those individuals around you. So it's a big step up as far as perspective goes. So when I went through Airman Leadership School 2013, I had been in for about 6 years or so. Slow burner, still am, can't help myself. All good things take time, right? If you
it's like a fine wine, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, well, either that or a hot pocket. You cook too hot and burn your mouth. So I figured, you know, wine's better. I'll go that route.
Yeah.
So I when I'm going through, I get a lot of information out of it, and I start to realize, hey, this is stuff I'm doing naturally or stuff that it really just makes sense to me and we can apply it. And like I said, I'm good at the whole people thing. So I figured out that puzzle. And I always thought, no way could I be an ALS instructor. I don't look the part. I'm not 125 pounds, 6 feet tall. I don't look the military you know, cookie cutter that I thought you had to look like, that like looks matters any more than visual stimuli. But I thought, for whatever reason, because I didn't look a certain way, I could never teach this stuff. So I always pushed it off. And finally, I had this, he's now a chief master sergeant, Edward Mueller, POL guy, great, fantastic human. And he came up to me and said, "Carly, you're going to do ALS." And I said, "Sir, I've already been." And he goes, No. You're going to teach ALS. Yeah. And I said, "Sir, come on. I'm a hard worker. I'm not the smartest by any stretch of the imagination, but I'll outwork anybody." So I said, "You know, I'll do every program you need me to do, but there's no way. It's not for me. They'll figure me out. They'll fire me. I'll get kicked out of the military. It'll be horrible. Sir, it's a mistake. Don't send me." So I don't hear anything else about it. And he keeps poking here and there. You know, a couple weeks go by and, "Hey, Carly, come on, do ALS." "Okay, sir. Okay." I think is what I actually said, which is at the time, staff sergeant to senior master sergeant. I'm like, "Okay, sir." I should have been speaking out of my ears. But the guy had a lot of grace. He had a lot of forward ideas that he was going to push me through. I just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
So I guess him and my first shirt at the time, Paul Lanoux, love him. Yeah. Absolutely love him. Can do more pull-ups than you think. That the man is a beast, for sure. I did some CrossFit with him, and he really inspired me. So he's awesome. Paul, if you're listening to it, you're an amazing human. All right. So Paul and Edward Mueller, okay, they decide we're going to push this young man to the uncomfortable area because we think he can do it. And why not? Growth is a great thing. I was stagnant. I was very comfortable, but I was doing great things, but I was very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And when you're comfortable, it's hard to grow. So they saw that. They identified that before I did. And they pushed me through. They did my package. They did my interview. They did everything. I didn't even know they did it. Okay. So time comes by.
So they did like a good supervisor is supposed to do.
I'm telling you. Wow. They saw it's crazy. they saw where I needed to go, saw that I was being like a stubborn mule, just pulling on the rope, and they pushed me down the hill. They didn't care I was going. And so I get there. Finally, it happens. The base leadership comes out to our flights, our squadron leadership, like literally everybody. And they were like, "Carly, you got to be there. You're giving a safety briefing." All right, cool. No problem. So I'm thinking nothing. I'm just standing in the back going, "This is kind of cool. Everybody's here." And then I get called up, but I was like, "No longer cool. What's going on?" And they were like, "All right, you're the new ALS instructor." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe this." Thought they were joking. They had to tell me twice to get it through my thick skull. So that's how I got there. There's a urban myth that a pillow fight went down to secure my spot. Oh, yeah. Supposedly, Paul Lanoux saw our command chief at the time, Chief Vizzy at Bed Bath Beyond, asked how the interview process was going. And the command chief, very honest man, was like, "Hey, listen, his package is great. He's done good things. We like him, but he's not our number one." And there was this pile of pillows right next to Paul Lanoux. And he said, "You know, listen, if I beat you in a pillow fight right now, you got to hire my guy." Well, to give this perspective, yeah, Paul can do some pull-ups. He's a tough guy. But the guy he was threatening was a combat airman, right? And he's like, "I'm going to take you down." And so he chuckles. And to my utter amazement, my first sergeant wallops them all up and down the aisle. He can't stop laughing. He finally gives in. I get hired. That's the urban myth. And I don't know.
Like, it's a good one.
And history ever since. It's been history ever since. So I've been
all the new takes on combat controller, destroys in pillow fight on aisle 4 of Bed Bath and Beyond.
Clean up of pride.
Yeah, left something back here, son. Well, that's awesome, Jeff. Thank you for sharing that. And to include the airman urban myth.
The urban myth, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, you know, I was scrolling around on Facebook, the old Book of Faces, the other night.
Book of Faces.
And then I saw a post by you that said, family, that's my words. I don't know if you said family or not, but you're like, "Hey, starting this new thing, it's called Summit Leadership." And I was like, "Hold the phone, let me look at this. What's Jeff got going on?" And man, I tell you, I said it earlier, but I couldn't be more proud of you, because not only Hopefully the audience, I mean, if they can connect, 1 + 1 = 4, or is it 2, 3, whatever the number is.
I joined the Air Force. I don't have to do this thing. A computer will tell me.
Bro, they don't make me do math. No, but on a serious note, you know, they connect the dots and hear your passion for people, right? And you've gone through some stuff. You've been somebody that's getting after it from a young age, understanding moments in your life and how important those are and teaching those to other people. Coming up, you were selected to be an ALS instructor. So for our civilian audience, I know he makes it sound simple, but that's an arduous process that we only send the best through our lens, our perspective at the time, the best NCOs to go lead other airmen that are going to be NCOs. So you got to have been there and done that and have the character, good character. So Jeff, you have all those things. Family, when I was looking at Facebook, I saw he's posted this, he's going to start Summit Leadership. I was like, my goodness, man, that is awesome, because this is, we need more people doing things like this. That's my perspective. That's not official Air Force, you know, viewpoint, so to speak. But now I don't know that we have taken full advantage of our NCOs and senior NCOs in the field to have a voice, a heart for airmen. And I mean that in a professional way, of course, a heart to help people, take care of people. And then maybe sharing that on whatever platform, if it's military or not, you know, my soul, my heart is to help airmen coming out of Airman Leadership School. Everything that I've done, books I've tried to publish and things like that, or write, or manuals or whatever, man, it's all about trying to help that first line supervisor, because I really do see that having well-trained airmen, I know we have inter-service rivalries where we're like this, that, and the other, but without airmen, well-trained airmen, we don't have an Air Force, and I don't care who you are, without an Air Force, we don't win the next one. So, but anyway, back to you starting this thing. What is Summit Leadership? You know, we don't have to, I don't want you to go full into the details just yet, but just kind of giving a synopsis of what Summit Leadership is and what that's about, man.
Yeah, definitely. So Summit Leadership is my trademark, my brand name of my tomorrow, right? So the way I look at it, the logo is a mountain. And my idea is for us to get all the way to the top of a mountain. It takes teamwork. It takes shared lessons, it's shared experiences, shared skills to navigate and climb a mountain. So that's my company that I started, was to pull all those skills, to pull everything together in a very manageable place. So like you said, you saw me on Facebook, right? Everybody's on the Facebook, the Instagram, the Snapchat, all these different things. It's the digital media is absolutely insane. It's overwhelming to me. But I know people are on Facebook because I'm on Facebook, and I know people are on Instagram because I've been told they're on Instagram. So I said, all right, if I can make this thing and I can make it digestible, if I can catch people, I had a coworker that says anything he needed to know about the world as far as consumption of information. So we're talking news, politics, current events, all that stuff. He said, if I can't get it while I'm sitting on the throne, it's not worth learning about. And I said, okay, man, all right. So I start looking at this and I said, all right, how can I take all this? I mean, we could talk for forever about people and theories and ideas and how it all works. And I said, all right, I got to boil this down into a 3 to 5 minute kind of, let's absorb it. And so that's what I've done. I've created an avenue that people can start going to, and they can get there 3 to 5 minutes once or twice a week, where I'm throwing out perspectives that I've heard a podcast, or I've read a book, or I've had this idea where I try to put it in a way that makes sense, and we can talk about it as a community and we can evolve the idea. And that's exactly what that is. It's a community area, 3 to 5 minutes, a couple times a week.
Man, that's awesome. You know, you mentioned about other podcasts. I listen to podcasts when I'm, you know, working out. So if I'm going to lift now, truth in advertising, when I say lift, I just try to get the bar. You know what I mean? I don't put any real weight on there. I just try to get the bar. But on cardio, I can just listen to podcasts. I'm going to lift some weights. I got to turn on some tunes and turn them up a little bit. But, you know, I listen to podcasts, you know, because it's quick bits of information. Within an hour time frame, there's a lot, depending on your flavor of what you like on podcasts. I go from faith-based stuff to Joe Bogdan every Tuesday. Man, he took a break, bro, and I was upset. I was like, hey, man. Like, I know you need your rest, but bro, every Tuesday, elliptical machine, where's right. It at, man? Where's life, learning, and leadership?
There's
at?
A relationship here, and you let me down.
So when you're talking about listening to those podcasts, now that's why I think, and that's where I was going, the road I was on earlier about having more airmen, in our case, airmen, more people in the military at the real level. And what I mean by that is at the tactical level where you're at, experiencing things that can translate that to other military members, but also to our citizens in society, right? Because I think you have an amazing way to reach people and connect with people. So I know it's going to be phenomenal, but I listen to some of the other podcasts, and I won't mention their names on here. Sometimes I think people end up, you know, people make a lot of money, dude. Like, you know what they I mean? From like motivational speaking and stuff like that. Now, some people earn it, you know what I mean? But some people, I listen to them now. I'm a little bit older, right? I've been around the block a couple of times. I listen to them, and it's almost like they're recycling old ideas. Leadership ain't new, right? But sometimes I think that people pay a lot of money, and they suspect that what they're hearing is worth that much money, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And so I think having somebody that's actually, and these people in these spaces, now they have definitely have a lot of experience within certain realms, right? But a lot of people have just been in front of people talking for a long time, taking stuff like from me and you that have walked the walk and been shot at a couple of times kind of thing. And they're like, hey, that worked for them. Let me analyze that, study that, write a book about it, have a podcast about it. So, man, I know you're going to be able to reach so many more people at their heart, right? People that might not ever listen to a throw a name of a well-known speaker or leadership, you know, whatever out there. They're not going to dial them up on the radio. They're not going to dial them up on a website. But having somebody they can see themselves in, hugely and immensely important. Now, I'm not saying that Jeff Carley ain't going to make it to the millionaire status. I'm not saying that at all. But I just know, like, having that real approach, man. So speaking of that, Jeff, were you just sitting on the porch one day and you're just like, yo, I'm going to start this thing? Were you in an ALS class one day? I'm like, I think I can take this next level. How did the thought of actually, maybe not even a thought, but the motivation, right? That, hey, I'm going to step out on faith. I'm going to step my foot out. We're going to start moving in this direction. What was like the catalyst that made that happen, man?
Yeah, good points. I want to tie my answer into something you said earlier, was being in Airman Leadership School, everybody gives their perspective. I get 32 to 48 different perspectives every 6 weeks, and those perspectives come from everywhere. So it was one, hearing the same perspective over and over and over. After a while, you start to realize the same characteristics, the same traits, the same scenarios, almost same verbiage, which is crazy because the people, they don't work together, they don't know each other, nothing, but it's like, oh, they said the exact same thing. And so you're starting to see, all right, this is systemic. There is something that is driving this from somewhere. So for a long time, I have thought, well, my impact is just going to be here in ALS, and I'm going to do my job the best I can. I'm going to absorb everything I can, whether it is civilian millionaire speaker all the way down to Joe Blow for podcast views. You know, I don't care. I'm taking it all because anything helps. And it wasn't until the wife and I, we were going out to drop the kids off at soccer, and all of my kids do sports. It's a blessing and a curse because it takes up so much time, but it also gives them valuable skills, and it's great to see them grow. And it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And I love it. I do. I love every bit of it. I love cheering. I love it all. It's a blast. But we drop them off, and it was a longer one that day for some reason. We had, I think it was about a 2-hour gap. Well, we're three young kids and we don't get a whole lot of free time, just the two of us. So we said, all right, well, let's go have a drink and let's get some food, and we'll just have a little impromptu date. So that's what we did.
Yep.
We went to this place, has pretty good beer, some good pizza and other things like that, and nice, easy, fast stuff. And so we sat at the bar because that's what you do when you don't want to wait on waiters and all that fun stuff. So we sat at the bar, and while we're at the bar, they're not busy at all. There's like eight people in this entire establishment, and it's thousands of square feet big. Like they are not busy. And I ask for the menu. I get ignored. I ask for the menu. I get ignored. I ask politely and loudly for the menu. And finally, I get a menu. So we get our beer and all that fun stuff. Well, there's starting to be a little gaggle of people, of workers. And in this gaggle, there is the manager of the whole building. He's like the manager, like the top dog. So this guy sets the standard for the organization, at least in this location, right? It's not franchise wide, but at least in this location. And then he's got a couple bartenders and waiters. And what I started to realize is how they're communicating with each other. And when things are slow at work, what do we normally do? We have a good time, we cut up, we tell jokes. We're building rapport and relationship, because when there's not a mission, you got to put the glue in there. Otherwise, when the mission's too hard, we fall apart, right? Yeah, so I'm expecting to see the same thing there. Where's the glue? Oh, there's no glue. It's all sandpaper. It's nuts. The way they're speaking to each other, the straight up disrespect, loud enough that I can hear them, and I'm a good 30 feet away, and I can hear them being disrespectful. I can see the manager standing there listening to it and not saying anything, which means he's blessing this behavior. And I start to talk to the wife, and I'm in that mode. All I can think of is leadership. All I've thought of leadership is for 5 years, that's sleep, eat, breathe leadership. That's it. That's all I think. So I'm like, he needs to be doing this. They need to be talking about this. These are the fixes. Why aren't we doing? And the wife's like, just calm down. And I couldn't. I did not interject myself. I'd be proud to at least say that. I let them do their thing. But it got under my skin. And I thought, whatever. But it never went away. I never let it go. And I just kept revisiting it. And I said, you know what? Enough's enough. It's not just us that need to talk about the behaviors that I hear about every day in ALS. It is the world as a whole. It is relationships everywhere, regardless of where you come from, what you do for a living, any of that stuff. We all have some piece of the puzzle that's a little crooked, that's a little messed up, that if we had a better way to talk about these crooked pieces, perhaps maybe we could adjust some of them instead of taking such offense to it and it causing trouble. It could cause harmony instead. And so that's what really drove me to go out. I said, all right, I need to find a way to do this. And the only way I know how is to put it out on paper, put it out on words, something, just throw it out there and whoever wants it, they can have it. But that's what made me jump, was that moment specifically.
Yeah. So you bring up some really good points. Tying back to what I'd said earlier, you know, a lot of times I think corporations, they pay good money just to bring people in and talk to their people. But as you know, you got to develop a relationship, right? So you can, and we've all done it, bro. You know what I mean? Like we've sat in a seminar and you'll be like, okay, you're selling Air Force core values back to you. Well done. back to us, you know, as an Air Force. So right. Where I see you, man, and I'm not trying to prescribe this as your business model by any means, but we're just knowing you. You know about how to build a relationship and establish relationship, and more of like I would like more of the Air Force to think of this in a coaching, and so that might be something that you're able to reach more people when you establish. Because you think of a coach, like I played football and then I coached football for years. You know, you know that team, right? And so right. To be able to lead somebody, you need to be able to expose, in your example, expose that manager and team to leadership concepts. That's one thing, but another thing to actually walk the path and coach them through that, how to do that. So I'm really excited for you. I'm excited that things like that do aggravate you, because so many times in life, people couldn't care less. You know what I mean? And just let people be people, and corporations could make more money if they actually had a well-led force, you know, and you got to take some selfishness out of it. There's some things that I really will submit to the entire of the world. Leadership won't fix if people don't want to be fixed or be led or be coached, right? But man, I'm excited. So how, not to give your entire business model away, you tell us what you want to, but how do you, what is kind of like, I guess, your lines of effort or approach, you know, if I'm thinking an aircraft and Air Force stuff is like schema maneuver and things like that, but how do you, what are the plans? Are you going to post things online? How do you reach an audience? How do you build an audience and that type of thing?
Yeah, so I actually am pretty blessed. My communication or my network, right? My people, you know, and I come from family with a lot of skill. And one of the skills, my aunt, Kelly Thomas, she happens to be really, really good at web design. And so I was talking about this idea and I put it out on Facebook. That's the first place you saw. I threw up a little leadership thing. I kind of like guessed my way into it. She instantly sends me a message like, hey, man, love ya. Looks like crap. Let me fix it. And I said, okay. So she does. And she goes, hey, do you want a website and stuff? Like, put this out and you can do all this other stuff. So she was kind of like helping me out, the brainchild stuff there. And I said yes to everything. I was like, all right, I'm not going to say no. If I'm doing this, I'm going to do this. And so we got a platform on the www, right? We got it out there. I got a .com. It's legit. Yeah. summitleadershipchallenge.com, right? So we're out there. And then from there, I linked it over to my Facebook. But one of the cool things is when I put it out online and everything I do goes there first, it automatically just throws it everywhere else. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so part of that is driving people to the online, because that's where you'll see it first, obviously. And my line of effort, what's my plan? What's my strategy? One, I'm only as smart as the 6 inches between my ears, and that's not very smart, right? It's just not. It may look different from my perspective, but I'm not any smarter than anybody else. So I give my perspective. I'm starting to work with a previous ALS instructor, Garrett Murray, fantastic human being, helped change me fundamentally as a human in my perspective. I was, full disclosure, man, whenever I first started this job, I was not, and I say I was not a good leader at all, period. I did not do the right things. I did not have the right perspective. I was good at my job. Yep. And I was good at helping others be good at their job. But when those people, and we've met them, when you try to help them and they don't want help, I wasn't very good with those people. I was toxic and I was nasty and it was disgusting. And he was one of the people that were like, hey, buddy. And he would just ask a question and he got real good at that. And I said, hey, man, I could use that skill. Why don't you come ask questions? Come do some stuff. So he's starting to write some stuff and that'll be out there soon. People will see that.
Garrett's good people, man. I miss Garrett. Yeah, Garrett's the one that saved me from a horrible situation too. That it happened multiple times before. I've told it on a couple of other podcasts about the going away plaque and things. He's like, hey, Chief, I don't think you know what that means. I'm like, what? What's it mean? Anyway, I don't want to digress with Garrett. I got a lot of love and respect for that, man. He's a great human.
Yeah, he's insane. He is the epitome of doing something because you know it's right, even though it's uncomfortable.
Yep.
And for I'll digress just a little bit. This guy is a fitness guru, right? But he's one of those people where he'll go find some weird thing online and he's like, that's it. That's what I'm doing this month. I'm doing that. Like 1 month he did like 100,000 sit-ups and he's like, that's it. That's all I'm doing this month. I'm doing 100,000 sit-ups. And then it's crazy. And then he found this one guy that the Wim Hof method, right? The breathing guy, but he's like, all about cold therapy. So in South Dakota, okay, out in the valley, this guy, we're talking 30-mile winds, negative 30 degrees, snow, ice, all this stuff, right? He decides, you know what? I'm going to go run pretty much a marathon. I'm going to go run a marathon without a shirt on, and it's the middle of winter, and it is cold. And he's just like, you know what? It won't kill me, and if it does, oh, well. Like, that was just his thing. So he gives me a lot of motivation when it comes to this. It's like, hey, if that man can run in that kind of stuff when it's really uncomfortable and everything else, I can post some stuff online. I can be vulnerable in my heart and I can put some stuff out there for some. It's not for everybody. And I get that. My perspective may not be for everyone, but I can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're good. You're going to do it and you're doing it and you're good at it. So there's always people that throw spears or, you know, there's always people that, you know, try to take you off whatever they see that you're being successful, right? Haters, if you will. You know, it's easy when you're hanging out. I don't know if you remember, I used to say it in your ALS class sometime when y'all invite me over. I still don't know why y'all invited me over, but when you did and I would speak, you know, like, it's easy to sit at the bottom of the mountain where it's all nice and warm and you can put your feet in the water. But why are these idiots climbing this mountain? It's easy to throw stones at them, right? So you're always going to have that. You know, you're going to misspell something sometime. Well, you probably won't. I do. You know, and somebody's
going to program.
You know, somebody's going to, yeah, I got a program for that. You know, when you don't have programs for that, you know, so there's always somebody that's going to take offense to, or not necessarily even offense. They're going to see something like, well, that's a stupid concept or a theory. Just keep pressing, brother. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people on your side, a lot of people in your court. I've got some people that after the podcast, when I, you know, share this podcast, I'll link in a couple of other people, see if they're interested and maybe a coaching or mentoring or bouncing ideas off of them. They've kind of done the same thing. You know, there's some, you know, COCOM command chiefs that I know that are now doing this in this space. Just, you know, I think this is what's great about the military community. There's other communities as well. But one thing great about our community that I know that you're also going to bring to the platform is the how we're connected. Like you said, hey, I'm well connected. I got other people that I know. And then we know some of the same people, but then some of that we don't, you don't have the same contacts. Right. And these are people that are doing phenomenal things that are okay with sharing how they got to where they are. So I think that's what's great about the space now that you're entering at this level, man. So if there's anything ever I can do, which we know I ain't doing that much. If there's anything I can do to help though, just let me know. And I'm going to try to connect you with some other people, but Before I let you out of here, man, we've been chit-chatting for about 48 minutes or so, but and I am still recording, brother. I've been checking it.
Stay I have too.
but is there anything that about Summit Leadership that I didn't pull the thread on that you just said, man, I got to tell some people, I want people to know, or any final words with Summit Leadership that you just want to share with the audience before I hit you with a three-round burst, man?
No, I do want to say thank you, though. I know this is round two for us, and that's very generous. Even giving me one round was more than I could have ever, ever, ever expected in my wildest dreams. Like I said, you say a lot of flattering things about me, and you're a humble guy, and you're saying, I can't imagine why you brought me out to Ehrman Leadership School. And I can't, you know, I'm just poking around over here. Man, you're one of the most real people. There's you, and there's three other people on that list that I know who are absolutely genuinely real. You said something earlier that sometimes our seminars, when we go and we try to get new perspectives and we try to better ourselves, we just get repackaged the same stuff and resold the same things. And we're not dumb people. We can see through this stuff. And I think motivation factors a lot into that. It's really easy to repackage something and say, oh, look, I made this. Mm-hmm. Especially in our world where we get to claim stuff like that and it helps us progress. I can see that a lot. And that's one thing I'm not going to do. I'm not going to repackage anything I've taught. Now, there might be some ideas or some stories that I pull from it. But if you've been through any leadership course and you come to me expecting to see that material, you're not going to see it. It's going to be a new take. It's going to be a fresh perspective because we're always changing. And one thing I learned about in Ehrman Leadership School is this curriculum that now, this is a poor time to say it because it's changed so much in the last couple of years. But prior to this, it hasn't changed in what seems like forever.
Yeah.
Well, people do. People change all the time. So I think it's really important that my brand or my message or my approach gets to change all the time. So that's one thing I can promise is I will be fresh all the time. And one thing I want to talk about real quick. I was listening to a podcast today and the individual had a guest on, and I don't remember his name, but he happened to create his own company, but he did it in a way that is everything that you could ever want. So the example he gives is when he was going to work. Now he's the CEO, he's the boss, he's the guy that created the whole thing. We go to work early, and during football season and basketball season, you know, people play the fantasy stuff and they have a really fun time doing it, and it's a lot of fun. Well, his company is no different. People are meeting up and they're talking, and he said, you know, I started to notice everybody's having a good time, everybody's laughing, but the closer we got to 8 o'clock, it was like somebody was dimming the light. Like excitement started getting less, all these things. Like, and he goes, now why do we have to be that way? I don't think work has to be not fun, not exciting, not like you're playing a game. Like it should be fun. And he said something that really stuck with me, and he's a religious man too, and he said, you know, we spend an hour every weekend at church. That's what my wife and I do. And we go and we spend an hour. But he goes, I spend 40 or more hours at work. And he goes, so what that's telling me is my exposure in my work life is 40 times more powerful to warp my behaviors, decisions, and values. Right?
Yeah.
And that got me thinking. I said, whoa. You know, I'm a religious guy. I read my Bible. I pray. I do all these things. I have a daily allotment. So for me, it's not just 1 hour, but that is definitely not 40 hours. I mean, I'm not that deep in there. I don't have that much time. So I got to thinking, well, if it's 40 times more effective to reach you in a third of your waking life, a third of your waking life is spent with people who are not your family.
Mm-hmm.
Why not turn that into an environment where you're like, man, I'm really happy I'm here? Because people don't quit jobs, they quit people. So I want to work on that people aspect. So that's my last piece. You hit me with your question.
Yeah, Jeff, I tell you what, it's been a complete honor to have you on and listen to your perspectives, your fresh perspectives, as you've stated, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you contribute to the leadership space, man. Continue, I should say, and increase upon what you're already doing. Because I know I know what you're doing in the Air Force space, man, and just truly honored to be a part of that in some small way, but see what you do in the other spaces that you're involved in. And so audience, also know that one of the projects I'm working, I asked Jeff to come on. So he wrote a piece for welcome to the hashtag Air Force Family 2.0. will be coming out sometime soon, but Jeff is involved in that. So thanks again for that, Jeff. You sent me back like, I didn't know you're gonna put it right in there. Well, yeah, bro, I did, because it's good stuff, you know, and it's good stuff for sure. So be on the lookout for that, you know, and also just remember along the way, Jeff, and I know you will, there'll be somebody else that's coming along that wants to start something, and give them those opportunities to kind of express themselves, right? So play it forward kind of thing. But something I wanted to ask you, it's not really a three-round burst. I used to do three-round bursts because, you know, I'm just probably a little off tilt spending too many years in Afghanistan. But what does success and legacy mean to Jeff Carley? What does that mean? Like, I think it just kind of helps put a bow on things. That's my perspective. Other people listening might not think so, but kind of gives you a little bit of more insight into Jeff and what Summit Leadership, the character of somebody that's running Summit Leadership, that will draw them in even more when they hear what it is that you think success looks like and what a legacy is, man.
Yeah, definitely. Success, it looks different to everybody else, right? But I think success to me, it's not numbers. It's not a financial thing. That stuff's nice. Let's not get crazy. To have the lights on and to have all the cool toys, you got to make some money. But success is not a dollar amount. It used to be when I was a kid, I used to think, well, if I just had $1 million, if I was just a millionaire, I'd be happy. Well, that ain't true. It's just not. I've met too many people in my life. So success to me is me being able to build something, whether it's an environment, a platform, a business, it doesn't matter, a community where we can do life together and we have respect and love for each other, where I can differ with you and you can differ with me, but we take each other seriously and then we go and we make it better tomorrow together. That's what that looks like to me. That's success. And legacy, that's always what somebody wants to say about you, right? When I pass and I'm gone, that's what I'm leaving behind is a legacy. So hopefully that community is still rocking and rolling. I know a lot of guys that I don't know them, obviously, but I know of quite a few very successful individuals in this space who have dead and gone. They've passed on, and they are still having people speaking their values, speaking their mission into existence. Still, it's still a train that's going, and that to me is just so awesome. And I and just a personal, if I could look at me and I could say, what does Jeffrey Leonard Carley actually want? What's my legacy? I want those people around me to know that I tried, that I lived with my whole heart, my whole passion. Now, that doesn't mean I lived perfectly, but I lived genuinely and authentically in everything I did. I was never just one toe in. I was either all the way in or I was all the way out. And that's a legacy I want. That's what I want my kids to remember, and those that knew me, is I want them to do better because they knew me, not worse because they knew me.
Absolutely, man. I tell you, no doubt about it. You already understand success, and you're right. It does look a little bit different to different people, but I think at the heart of majority of people, the vast majority would see success defined very similar to how you defined it. Again, super excited for you, man. I'm proud of you, proud of what you've been able to accomplish and what you'll do in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, check out the show notes. I'll have it all linked in there to where you can get a hold of Jeff. You can check out his new website. And you know, review his material, give him some feedback on it, right? Give him some attaboys too, because there's just not enough of that in life, right? So Jeff, thanks so much again for coming on, brother. I really appreciate you. I'm proud of you. Love you. We out, fam.